the fifth case this morning, U.S. versus Matthews. I'm sorry, the fourth case, which is Scruggs. Mr. Robbins.
My name is Douglas Krasnoff, and I am representing the plaintiff, Mr. Darryl Scruggs. I had to file my appearance just yesterday because co-counsel's mother passed away last week. May it please the court. This is an appeal from the district court's order granting the defendant's motion for summary judgment in this an FMLA case. The only legal issue before this court now is, did the defendant have an honest belief or an honest suspicion that the plaintiff was abusing his leave? The answer to that question is yes. It did have an honest belief or an honest suspicion, but only for a few days in August of 2007. We say this because plaintiff says this because he produced exonerating evidence that any reasonable person could have concluded that he was using his leave for its intended purpose. I'd like to remind the court that the plaintiff produced the following pieces of exonerating evidence. He produced a sign-out sheet from the nursing home. He produced a letter from the nursing home. And he produced three iterations of a doctor's note, which collectively I'll just refer to as the doctor's note because they were all essentially the same.
I don't think they were.
One had...
And the discrepancies between them are significant here.
In the doctor's notes?
Right.
The doctor's added a time. He added his initials. And I don't actually recall the third thing that he added. But there's nothing in the record that plaintiff forged any of that information.
That's the inference.
Excuse me?
That's the inference from
There's been no allegation in this case at all before the trial court or in any of the briefings in the appeals that he forged this information.
The employer was entitled to believe he had. And to add that to the mix in terms of its termination decision.
Your Honor,
he not only looked like he was abusing his leave because he was only authorized a very limited amount of leave and for very limited purposes, and they had surveilled him and determined that he had abused it, and then his post-hoc justifications, the three iterations of the doctor's notes, which were themselves conflicting and also conflicted with the information from the nursing home, only bolstered its honest belief that he was abusing his leave. What's important here is that they honestly believe that he was abusing the leave, and that's why they terminated him. And and your argument rests on the significance of that additional evidence that he came in with during the grievance hearing, and that evidence all points in the direction of an honest belief that he was abusing his leave. It doesn't point in the opposite direction, and it can't reasonably be suggested that it did.
He didn't bring in any extra evidence into the grievance hearing. So I'm not following Your Honor's track
over
there.
When did that get produced?
That got produced in between the time that he was suspended and they sent him a termination letter.
Okay, before the grievance hearing.
Yes.
Okay.
And before he was terminated. So the defendant didn't even call up the doctor to see if that was authentic or not. The defendant didn't call up the nursing home to see if that was authentic or not. The defendant didn't call up the plaintiff to see, to let him explain his story.
What legal requirement was the employer under to do any of those things?
The employer needs to do a fair investigation. Now, this court has said that a defendant can do a poor investigation. The defendant can do a bad investigation, but it has to do a fair investigation. and it didn't do any investigation. It didn't call up anybody. And by the way, Your Honor, in his suspension letter, the letter specifically states that we will do a thorough investigation. That's putting their investigation at issue. He's entitled to rely on the fact that they're going to do a fair and thorough investigation. They did no investigation. When you do no investigation, it becomes an inquisition. When they have a predetermined idea and they have no evidence to back it up, Mr. Scruggs is entitled at this stage to the inference that the doctor's note is authentic. That's the purpose in summary judgment, that all reasonable facts and inferences should be given in his favor. There's no evidence that it was fraudulent, so he is entitled to the inference that it is authentic. If they can prove at trial that it is fraudulent, they'll win. But a jury should be able to determine whether that was fraudulent or not, not pure speculation on the part of the defendant when it did no investigation.
Well, that presumes that the question a jury would answer is whether he actually was abusing his leave.
That is exactly the point that the trial court was making. The trial court said it is in dispute whether he used his leave for its intended purpose.
That's not the jury question here. The jury question is whether the employer honestly believed that he was abusing his leave, not whether he actually was.
No, well, that is something for this court to decide, whether an honest belief or honest suspicion defense should be available in an FMLA interference case. In an FMLA interference case, a plaintiff has to prove five different elements. He was an eligible employee. That's not in dispute. The defendant was a covered employer. That's not in dispute. He was entitled to the leave. That's not in dispute. He gave the defendant sufficient notice. That's not in dispute. The defendant denied the employee benefits and interfered with the FMLA rights in which he was entitled to. That's not in dispute. A corollary to that, or let's say an extra element, is that the employee used his leave for its intended purpose. The trial court said that is in dispute. For the purposes of summary judgment, then, we are entitled to the plaintiff's version of did he use it for its intended purpose. He's testified that he did. There's been no evidence to the contrary. He's produced a note from a doctor. There's been no evidence to the contrary. He produced a sign-out sheet which has his name and the date of the exact date in question. He produced a letter from the nursing home stating he was there. No attorney in this room would advise their client to do more. Perhaps an attorney might advise their client to write a letter to the defendant. Mr. Scruggs never even graduated high school. He was not even shown the video, that the surveillance video against him. He wasn't aware of all of the facts that the defendant had. He did the best he could under the circumstances. That's all an employee can reasonably be expected to do, the best under the circumstances. The defendant took all of his exonerating evidence and used it against him. That's their case, using the plaintiff's evidence against him. They have no independent corroborating evidence. There are three startling points that I really would like to make in this case. There's no evidence in the record that the plaintiff ever abused his leave. The defendant's entire case is based on disbelieving the plaintiff's exonerating evidence. The defendant didn't even put into the record the surveillance video. That's the only thing that led to their initial suspicion or honest suspicion that the plaintiff was abusing his leave. In this case, the plaintiff had to put into the record their surveillance video. That's pretty amazing. Finally, the defendant argues two things. It argues that it honestly believed that the plaintiff did not leave his home and did not go to the doctor on July 27, 2007. it says it has that honest belief. Simultaneously, it says, we terminated Mr. Scruggs' employment because he failed to return to work following the doctor's appointment. Those two positions are entirely contradictory. And the argument that they fired him for failing to return to work absolutely undercuts their honest belief or honest suspicion that he didn't go to the doctor. You can't have your cake and eat it too in this situation. There are situations, and most situations in the law, a party can argue in the alternative. This is not one of those situations. When you argue in the alternative here, you undercut your principal argument. See, my time for rebuttal has just begun, so I will concede the floor.
McCarb?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Cintra McCardle. I represent Carrier Corporation in asking this Court to affirm the judgment of the District Court. What Plaintiff's Counsel, Mr. Scruggs, is attempting to do today is to have this Court debate whether Carrier made the right decision, and in doing so is asking this Court to second-guess that decision and second-guess the investigative practices of Carrier. Respectfully, that's not the issue in this case, and that is not the law of this circuit. Carrier's brief sets forth multiple independent reasons as to why summary judgment should be affirmed in this case, and therefore I disagree with opposing counsel's view that there's a single issue, and that being the honest suspicion. There are multiple issues. There are set forth in our brief, but I'd like to focus on two today. Both deal with the FMLA interference claim, and both are plaintiff's burden to prove in this case. Your Honors, something that was entirely absent from Mr. Scruggs' argument today and is virtually absent from his briefing is that there was no benefit denied here. We don't even have to get to the honest suspicion standard. He has to show a benefit was denied. And in his reply brief, paragraph 1, page 1, he concedes the only conduct at issue in this case relates to Carrier's conduct regarding his alleged use of intermittent leave on July 24, 2007. He now tries to say, in contravention to his deposition testimony, which is the only issue I had with it, was you terminated me for the wrong reason. Now he's arguing you didn't reinstate me and you prevented me from using further leave. Your Honors, it's undisputed that both of those things are just not true. He told Carey he was using a full day of FMLA on July 24, and on July 25, he resumed his job duties with pay and benefit. Nothing changed. On July 26 and 27, he took two more days of alleged intermittent FMLA leave, which, by the way, he testified he didn't use to take his mom to the doctor, and resumed his duties again after those 2 days. So there's been no denial of a benefit. You don't even have to get to the question of whether he was entitled to the benefit he was denied. He wasn't denied one. But even if this takes me to the second issue that I want to talk about today, which is the honest suspicion standard. And I'd like to clarify that standard because it is not as Mr. Scruggs' counsel has described today. The standard is not, was Carrier's belief reasonable? Was their investigation fair? Standard as set forth in Carriotis, followed in Bale, followed in Crouch, and is also, I would argue, used in Simpson, court's decision in Simpson, is did Carrier honestly state its reason for terminating his employment? That's the question. And, Your Honors, that is undisputed. Mr. Scruggs tries to argue that we've somehow changed and shifted our reasons for termination. It's just not true. Carrier has never asserted that it terminated him for not returning to work on July 24th when he was home by 11 a.m., according to his own statements, and he lived less than a mile away from Carrier and didn't end his shift until 4:30. That actually goes to Your Honor's point, Judge Sykes, that that's the intended purpose argument. That's not a belief issue. That's a fact. Mr. Scruggs said during the grievance hearing, which was post-termination, hey, by the way, my brother picked me up, and we were back home by 11. I went to visit a sick neighbor, and then I took the rest of the day off. He told us he was using FMLA the whole day. But he didn't, obviously, so therefore he didn't use his leave for its intended purpose. That's a separate issue. What's been stated from day one in this case is that Carrier terminated his employment because it believed that he misused his leave, which was a violation of Plant Rule 10, which specifically addressed through usage misuse of FMLA leave, and that's always been the basis. The fact that the video showed he didn't seem to leave his house that day, the fact that we had the conflicting stories with the documents, all of those things are factors. But the reason is because we believed abuse had occurred, and that violated Plant Rule 10. A shifting explanation in this court is deemed a substantively shifting explanation. And what that means is your decision maker says, hey, I fired you because we had a rift, eliminated your position. Then decision maker says, no, it was performance reasons. Those are substantively shifting issues, substantively shifting reasons. Saying to somebody, I think you misused your leave, and what I looked at was video, the documents that seem to be contradictory, your usage of FMLA over a six-month period where you had the right to go once or approximately every 6 months to the doctor, but you used it 12 times in 4 months, that all leads us to suspect something's going on here. And what we suspect is you've been misusing your leave. And that was the basis for the decision, and that was the decision that was made. And Mr. Scruggs has conceded that we terminated him based on our investigation, and we believe that he'd misused his leave.
What was your investigation?
Thank you, Your Honor. The investigation consisted of the following. It consisted of, for the first time, obtaining video footage on August 7th, that it appeared he had not left his house all day. The van that he used to transport his mother to the nursing home and to her doctor had not left his house all day. He emerged about 1 o'clock to check the mail. We didn't fire him based on that. We called him in. We said, hey, on August 9th, where did you go on July 24th? And he said, I don't recall. I would have been with my mom, though, because I don't misuse FMLA, but I don't really recall. We didn't fire him then. We suspended him pending further investigation. Mr. Scruggs then gave documents to the union, not to Carrier, and I want to clarify this, too, that August 9th letter did not come to Carrier until the grievance hearing, which was post-termination. The documents Carrier had were the three doctor's notes, which stated he was here with his mom between 10 and 10:30 a.m. Then we had a sign-out sheet from the nursing home, which Mr. Scruggs admits he had to sign that sheet to take her out of the nursing home, which said he didn't even pick her up till 11:30. And by the way, when these were turned in, Mr. Scruggs didn't say, you know, I know these are contradictory on their face and I'd like to explain it. He turned them in and said, "This is, you know, here's my evidence." So based on that information, we then looked at the FMLA records, we looked at the leave usage during the period, and the parameters of his leave. And Regina Pendleton, the decision maker in this case, said, well, something's odd here. You know, you've got, your parameters are once every 6 months, but you've used it 12 times in 4 months. And then something else is odd here. You used it 12 times in 4 months, but the sign-out sheet says you've only signed her out 3 times. Oh, and wait, there's still something else that's weird here, which is your certification says you're the only transportation for your mom, and someone else has signed her out before. So all of this information put together in Ms. Pendleton's mind was something's not right here. And consistent with other cases not involving FMLA leave, Ms. Pendleton made the decision to terminate his employment for suspected misuse or abuse of leave. Now, you know, I would argue, and I am arguing, that evidence, even if we had a reasonable belief standard, even if the court were invited in to say, let's take a look at this belief, let's really evaluate it, that's reasonable by any stretch. What Mr. Krasnoff wants to do is shift the burden to Carrier and say, you should have called, you should have found out more information. Well, there's three problems with that. Number one, FMLA interference claim, there's no burden shifting. The burden is at all times on the plaintiff to prove his case. Number two, where would it end? If we called the nursing home and left a message and never got a phone call back, did we do enough? If we called and got a phone call back someone said to us, I'll check into it, and they never called us back, did we do enough? Mr. Scruggs is arguing what he really wants is it's our burden to do this, and we better speak to the person who was an eyewitness to that sign-out sheet so we know for sure whether he abused his leave. That is not the standard. And, Your Honors, I think most importantly, the FMLA regulations at 29 CFR 825.216A state that the right to reinstatement or any other right under the FMLA, an individual has no greater protection than someone not using FMLA leave. So let's take a look at that. In a discrimination case, if you've got a race discrimination case, and the individual is fired for misconduct. And we go before the entire analysis, we're at summary judgment, they come forward with their prima facie case, the employer offers the legitimate non-discriminatory reason, then the plaintiff has to prove that's dishonest. Well, if we go down this reasonable road, we've switched that around. If you're on FMLA leave, the employer is now going to prove that it's not, that their belief was reasonable. They now bear the burden of proof, and that's a greater protection to somebody taking FMLA leave than somebody who's not on FMLA leave. The case law is clear, and this court said in Karyotis, where the standard, by the way, was created, the court doesn't have to create a new standard today. On a suspicion standard was created in Karyotis versus Navistar, said the statute rules out that inequity. It rules out the inequity that somebody who has FMLA leave is entitled to some greater protection than someone who does not. So, Your Honors, I go back to what I think is critical point here is that carrier need only honestly describe its reason for the termination decision. And that's actually language from the Simpson case, where the court was dealing with an FMLA interference claim and said an honestly described but poorly founded reason is still enough. So it's not even poorly founded in this case, but it's certainly honestly described, because the whole crux of Mr. Scruggs' argument is you terminated him based on this investigation. That's what we've said all along. That's an honestly described reason. But even if the court, as I said, wants to go down the road of let's take a look at the reasonableness of this decision, the facts are evident. Carrier did not, this was not some kind of spur-of-the-moment decision, and I'd like to compare it to Karyotis for that reason. In Karyotis, where this standard was created, the employer did two things and only two things. They had video evidence that the woman who was on leave was engaging in conduct that seemed to be inconsistent with her physical restrictions. The HR manager called her in and asked her, what are your restrictions? What's going on? And she said, she gave a vague answer, and he wasn't quite clear what that answer was. The HR manager didn't follow up. He didn't ask her, what do you mean? He didn't call the doctor. One of his co-managers even said, hey, maybe you should call the doctor and find out what the true answer is here. He said, no, I think she lied, and he fired her. This court upheld that under the honest suspicion standard and said, you know what? The employer had an honest suspicion. That's enough, and they don't need to prove anything else. It's beyond reproach that Carrier did much more than that, Your Honors. It can't even be questioned. At this point, if there's no further questions, I would just simply like to conclude that we would like the court to affirm the judgment of the district court and find that a carrier is entitled to summary judgment on both the FMLA interference claim and the retaliation claim, which wasn't discussed today, but will rest on our briefs. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cosmo, you have 5 minutes.
Your Honors, first of all, this case is clearly distinguishable from Vail, Karyotis, and Crouch. As I said before, in those cases, the plaintiff never presented contemporaneous exonerating evidence. In those cases, the plaintiff failed to meet his prima facie burden. In this case, it is undisputed that the plaintiff has met his prima facie burden. And opposing counsel has said that there is no burden shifting in an interference case. So if we've met our prima facie case, we should be done. We agree that there is no burden shifting. They attempt to burden shift by saying, well, wait a minute. We have this honestly held belief. Well, when I walk around my office mumbling to myself, I affectionately call this case the Santa Claus case, because they want you to believe in Santa Claus. There is no fact in this case that Mr. Scruggs ever abused his leave. I would like to quickly come back to the bench's question before about the doctor's notes. If there were any allegation of fraud in this case, the plaintiff would have deposed the doctor. There's been no allegation of fraud, and therefore we didn't feel the need to depose the doctor. The standard for the honest suspicion or honest belief defense in this circuit is very nebulous, and that is what's causing so many problems in this case. It's nebulous because there's not a clear demarcation as to whether it should be a subjective standard or an objective standard. If it's a subjective standard, the FMLA leave Act would be rendered absolutely meaningless. Every employer will come in and say exactly what they're saying. We believed, we wrote it down. That is not the appropriate standard. In the Sixth Circuit, the standard is that an employer must rely on the particularized facts before it. This court has repeatedly said that you are not going to use that as the test. But when an employer does not rely on the particularized facts before it, which it didn't in this case, that is surely evidence that their belief is not honest. Or, if it's not, it at least is a jury question for a jury to decide whether their belief was honest. It is inappropriate for a district court to say, as a matter of law, that their belief, which is based on, I don't know what it's based on, to tell you the truth, should carry the day. It's like saying to us, prove that we don't believe in Santa Claus. That's an impossibility. I can't prove that what they do or do not believe. I can say that a reasonable person would not believe in Santa Claus. A reasonable person presented with a doctor's note, a sign-out sheet, and a letter from the nursing home, when exactly that was provided to the defendant is an issue. That has not been definitively resolved. Also, the defendant says, well, the plaintiff could have just come into our offices and explained the situation. That is untrue. The plaintiff was escorted off the premises and was not allowed back on the premises until his grievance hearing. And this is not the case of an employee at will situation. This is a union employee. He had been there for more than 20 years. He had a perfect attendance record. He was never disciplined. He was a model employee in every way. And he was fired. Why? Because he took his mom to the doctor. That just doesn't seem fair. Just briefly in conclusion, his final FMLA certification said he's entitled to take his mother to the doctor once every 6 months. The second time during the summer of 2004 when he asked for FMLA leave, why didn't the defendant say, no, you can't, or get recertified? They let him take FMLA multiple times. There's no evidence in the record that he asked to take his mother to the doctor on those occasions. There's no evidence in the record that he didn't actually go to the nursing home to help his mother, as he had been for the previous 3 years. The reasonable inference there is they were trapping him. They were setting him up. If that's not a reasonable inference, it's a possible inference. A jury could conclude that easily. That is why there was the discrepancy between the sign-out sheet and I see my time is running out. Can I just briefly conclude that? That's why there was a discrepancy between the sign-out sheet and the dates that revealed his absences, because he was not taking his mother to the doctor on those days. All he was doing was going to the nursing home to help her, as he had been for 3 years, and that date discrepancy is illusory. Thank you very much.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be